Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, I'm going to get into some airplane mask hypocrisy that I think is going to blow your mind. You should share it with smart people. Do we need masks? Are they important? And if so, why? Why do they hand out certain things on a Southwest flight? All right, I'll get into that in a second. Also, I was early and often to this Trump music that he played at his at the end of his rally the other day, and we talked about it earlier in the week, so we'll get to that, or last week, I should say. First, Life Lock. Certain behaviors make you more vulnerable to identity theft, like using the same password on every account and oversharing personal information on social media. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet. You can miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information, they will send you an alert. It's 2021. Protect yourself. Well, it's almost 2021. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one prevents all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web. Get your free dark web scan at lifelock.com/scan. Pick the plan that's right for you and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. That's a free scan at lifelock.com/scan and 25% off with promo code Adam.
And Casper Van Dien is going to join us as well. Very interesting story with that guy. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Right now, Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policy. That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you if you're going with Geico. So what are you waiting for? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Get that extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. That's geico.com.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and brought to you by Bet Online, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the star of The Second, Casper Van Dien. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Jeff Cesario with the sports. And now, RGB wasn't his favorite Supreme Court justice, but she was the only one he could spell. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We're going to remember it. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. Good day, Gina Gran.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Boom.
I had a story that I've been wanting to tell you guys for a couple days because I love a good contrast story. I love when I was in South Central locked in a windowless bathroom arguing with a bad contractor and my wife and kids were on a zip line flying over Catalina. I like a contrast, you know what I mean?
With a bad contractor?
Yeah, it's never no, they didn't have the contractor on the zip line. You know, saying, well, I went from a hot tub in a slightly hotter hot tub is no good story. I like going from the hot tub into the snowbank, you know.
Right.
So with that in mind, that was the life I was leading on Sunday morning when we skedaddled out of Phoenix, which was I was looking forward to and had been talking to Geragos because when I was flying out, before I flew out to Phoenix, I did a podcast with Geragos and then literally just got up and left for Phoenix. And of course,
I woke up in Phoenix this morning.
I did. And he was making fun of me for flying Southwest. And for him, it's all the private. He goes private everywhere. And it's really hard to get used. Go back to not only are you going back to commercial, but your Southwest commercial and Burbank and everything. So here we go. And so he's making fun of me and he's saying, when we go to Utah, when we go to Salt Lake City in a couple of weeks, where we're going to play Wise Guys, I think the second and third, we're going to do some live podcasting there. We're going to do some stand up there. And then we're also going to do a live Reasonable Doubt matinee show there at 4 o'clock.
Because
he's going to be, anyway, you guys know the story. We're going to fly in privately with Mark. So he was making fun of me. And we flew there without incident. And then we're getting ready to come back Sunday. And I got a text from Gary, I think Saturday, saying, well, we got RGB died. Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Right.
I got RBG.
What'd I say?
RGB.
Oh, I said RGB?
I think so.
Dawson, I mean,
I wouldn't have said it again.
Yeah.
I thought it sounded like RGB to me.
I was tuned out. I'm sorry.
All right. RGB.
I was watching the second.
Dawson saying no. Saying no.
Well,
to
but
you,
Dawson, but I Dawson said R. But Dawson said RGB too. I think in the opening.
I probably said it.
Oh, you now said it.
Dawson's been saying RGB as well. I think you did say RGB, which is common because red, green, blue. It's a color.
Well, mark the tape. We can go check.
Mark it
out.
Let's see what it. Let's see what it said. Maybe I said what you said, and then you heard what I said and what you said. But either way, anyway. She passed. We needed to do a special supplemental reasonable doubt. And the only time we could do that is going through the airport Sunday morning when I was leaving out of Phoenix.
Jesus.
So.
Timely footnote. I just Googled RGB just to see what comes up. There is a shocking and saddening number of news stories from outlets I recognize, very famous outlets that have RGB in the title. RGB is
right.
Now
there's also RG3 from the Washington football. RG3, the quarterback from the Redskins a couple of years ago, and he is from the Redskins because he was there. RG3, yes, RG3 has got me screwed up as well because I'm used to saying RG3. We're just having Mike and I were just talking about, is RG3 still in the league? And yes, in fact, he's she's not, but he's on the team. So RG3 is RB.
Wasn't there a movie, Brian, like BFG, BFD?
Oh, the BFG. That's actually a sweet movie.
Big fucking giant or whatever it's called.
The biggest.
All right. Okay. Well, we're getting off course. The point is I knew I was going to have to get up early and head to the Phoenix airport. I knew we were going to have to drop off the rental car. It's always heartbreaking when the rental car is far enough away that you have to take the shuttle. That always adds a big wrinkle. Also, so says Mike, with the COVID distancing on the shuttle, the line of 20 people is now three trips, not one trip where everyone packs into the shuttle together. So the shuttle's a wild card. You never know how far away it is, which bus is leaving when, what the capacity of the bus could be. Either way, do shows until midnight. I'm trying to time this thing where I'm going to do this supplemental Reasonable Doubt with Mark Garagos at 9:30 my time. He's in New York. He, of course, is in Manhattan and getting ready to go to brunch, a boozy brunch, as he described it. I'm laughing because my schedule is come back from the club at 12:30 at night, wake up at 7, hustle, load up the rental car, have Mike drop Chris and I off in front of the Southwest terminal with the equipment carrier, the turtle case, the big hard case equipment carrier with all the microphones and DAT recorders and whatnot. And then with the merch bag, the giant merch bag, but because of timing or execution, a case of my books, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, was sent to the club. We then brought a case of books. We then sold almost a case of books, but we ended up leaving with a heavier merch bag than we showed up. The merch bag is you show up with a 55-pound merch bag, and hopefully you bring back a 15-pound merch bag. This is show up with a 55-pound merch bag and leave with a 68-pound merch bag. So,
hey Mike, how'd we do tonight? I got about 40 pounds of merch.
Right.
Out the door.
So now we are tasked, Chris and I, to take the big merch bag and the big equipment bag box, rolling hardcover box, hard jacket, and we're going to take that along with all our luggage as well while Mike hurries off to the rental car place to drop off the rental car. So then Chris and I wait in line at Southwest, do the check-in kiosk thing, get the boarding passes, and also the luggage labels as well. Then as we get in, we're throwing them all up on the scale. And the scale, the max is 50 pounds. And if you go over 50 pounds, then it's $70. And it kind of like reminds me of when you'd order a pound of chicken salad at the deli, and the guy'd put the clear container on there, and it said 1.4 ounces, or and he'd start taking some out, like trying to trying to even it out. So Chris throws the first sack up there. It's, you know, I don't know, what was it, 10, 12 pounds over?
Yeah, it was about 63, so 13 pounds.
So meanwhile, I'm kind of looking at the clock because I know I have to call Gergos in 17 minutes to discuss to do this episode. I know he just made fun of me for flying commercial in Southwest. And now the Chinese fire drill begins, which is Chris is unzipping the big merch bag, and he's
trying to balance it out.
He's trying to balance out. He's lightening the load. He's throwing sandbags off the gondola, but the sandbags are all my books. They're only my books. That's the thing that's weighing down the merch bag. It's not the T-shirts. It's my books, and they're all my books. And so he just keeps pulling them out and handing them to me. I'm now holding a tower of my own books, very nervous that the person behind the counter is going to see my face on the book, and this is going to look disastrous because obviously it's embarrassing to be a celebrated author and have some guy just pulling out books feverishly, anything but pay the $70.
Bright yellow books.
Oh, God, no.
Bright yellow books. So you say, and I'm holding now 18 books piled up, and Chris gets this one down to normal, and we gets it to 50 pounds straight up. Fine, that can go. Now it's time for the merch. Sorry, now it's time for the equipment. Now he pulls that out. He's pulling out microphones and batteries and DAT recorders. And now I'm stuffing those into my bag because my bag's getting checked too, but my bag only weighs 8 pounds. So we're going to shift the load. He's shoving the books. I'm still very worried that someone is going to see my picture on these books that we're holding. We're both sweating profusely. And I'm thinking,
peddling those books.
I'm going to call Mark in 8 minutes, and he's going to laugh his goddamn ass off at this thing. Anyway, he kindly called me a man of the people, which just means poor, cheap, or loser or something.
Scum.
He called me a man of the people and said I was better than he was. And then I said to Chris, I said, Jesus Christ, Mark's going to have a field day with this whole Southwest light in the luggage business. And Chris goes, I don't think he's going to know what that is.
Oh, good point. Wow. Thought, he doesn't know those
why
rules.
Why would he? You think he's ever been to Southwest and pulled a bunch of shit out of luggage and thrown it into a duffel bag?
No,
he doesn't even know what that is. I bet he doesn't even know what the airport shuttle is. I mean, he doesn't even know what that he may not be able to properly define the rental car shuttle and how that system works.
He's like George H.W. Bush looking at the scanner going like, how does that work?
Yes, it is exactly that. Although that turned out to be a little hoaxy, but I definitely
It was a funny, it was a digestible image.
Yes.
For the record, Adam, Mike August and I do that all the time.
I know. I know, but your picture isn't on that book.
Yeah, I know.
Speaking of August, the real wrinkle that messed you guys up was August was returning in the rental car because on Southwest, everyone gets two free checked bags, right? Chris, is that correct?
That's right,
yes. Because if August had been there, the switcheroo would have been much easier.
Well,
I checked in my duffel bag, and so did Adam. So we each had two bags because we had the merch equipment and then two duffel bags. So it was, the four of us was just fine.
I had apropos of nothing, but I witnessed this yesterday, and I wonder if there's just going to be more of it. I was driving through not exactly my neighborhood, but three, 4 miles out of my neighborhood, and saw a bunch of Glendale cruiser cop cars just sort of piled up like three deep. And guys out of their car, and I saw this scene, and I realized, there's going to be a lot more of this, which is black man sitting on bus stop, didn't seem to be homeless or anything, just black man sitting on bus stop. Cop standing about 6 feet away from him, sort of 28-year-old white cop talking to him, black man going nowhere, and then more and more cops showing up, but nobody's making a move. Right. So realize, think about it. You're Glendale PD. You get called. There's a guy. He's on a bench in a bus stop. He has a knife, or he's done something, or we think he's done something. Can you walk up tell him to get up. He doesn't get up and start wrestling with him in this day and age. I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. What 26-year-old cop's going to want to completely throw away is whatever. So I just realized the cop, I don't know how it ended, but they were there for an hour. I mean, the guy's just sitting on the bench going, I'm not going to get up. I imagine. I didn't hear the dialogue. The cop's obviously saying, get up or get in the car or turn around or do something. And the guy's like, no. And then all the cops are just sort of piled up. I don't know what the next move is. It is where my tack crows come in. But in this day and age,
clearing bus stops.
What should that man, what does that man have to do, and what are the cops going to do? I mean, it's broad daylight. People got their camera phones out. Like, are you going? And then I thought, yes.
It's like we've talked about before. I mean, it's a dice roll for him or for anybody. It's if you want to take the chance of getting tased or, God forbid, shot, and you want to be, you know, non-compliant. We know that that happens. Or, you know, you get the red carpet rolled out and everyone just kind of waits and waits to see how you feel. You just don't know what's going to happen.
I thought you were going to say a dice roll for the cop, because that's where the
I think it's a dice roll for the cop. I think you can sit and be non-compliant. At least in Glendale, California, in 2000 and almost 21, I think that guy could sit there for two hours.
Yeah. Obviously, it depends on what he did or what he's, you know, the call came in. Was he harassing other bus stop patrons? Was he or defecating himself? I mean, who knows? But I'm saying, like, you know, why risk it if you're the cop? Like, that's the dice rule. It's like, oh, this guy is not violent. He's just harassing people. I'm not going to bother or, you know, strong arming this guy or whatever it is.
And Brian, it's cute that not living in the Valley, you don't know that nobody cares about people defecating themselves. That's not a punishable act.
Really?
Yeah,
no,
I don't know.
Not by a long shot.
Chris, is there someone like the police blotter? It was like right off of Honolulu there in Montrose. It was like right by Montrose there. And I don't know. I have no idea if the guy was a criminal or what the story was, but they were just standing there and I realized, oh, this is the New World Order. That guy, those cops are going to stand there for a good long time before any movement. And then I thought, well, good. And then there's another part of me that went, I don't know, it's not a real good use of resources. There's just three cop cars just sitting there and guys just sitting around for an indefinite period of time until the police psychologist arrives and the camera crew and we're able to document everything. I had a, you guys can look for that. It was kind of a, I just threw a curveball there. I was talking to Dr. Drew, and we're having a talk about masks and people being sort of catch-as-catch-can. Southwest, I flew Southwest. You know, Mike August wears it around his chin. He wears the mask like a Mennonite wears his beard. That's basically how – that's his look, a Mennonite's beard. No mustache, just a beard. It's a Mennonite's beard. He looks like the guy in the Quaker – he looks like a Quaker, I think, with that thing. But the point is – the flight attendant was just walking up and down, like, mask up, sir, mask up, mask up. Because what people do is they pull it down, they take a sip off something, and then it stays down, you know. And the flight in from Phoenix, in the air, about 55 minutes. And she told everyone to put their mask on 117 times. And it was kind of a foolish flight. Like, they're slowly sneaking people onto that plane. And I don't mean sneaking them onto the plane. But what I'm saying is when we were on those flights 3 months ago, sparse.
Right.
This Southwest flight was foolish. Okay. Meaning, like, when the guys who sell plywood keep shaving a millimeter off it every year to get a little more in their pockets. And I think Southwest is going to keep adding two or three people each time. But either way, here's, you guys tell me this. Because Drew said, yeah, it's a bad idea. The flight is literally under an hour. You're begging everyone to keep their masks on constantly. Why are you handing out a sack of pretzels?
Yeah. It's a good question.
Yeah, why are they?
I thought I'd just see how long it took you guys to answer. Go ahead. Yes.
I thought there was a rhetorical reply coming, but like, yeah, I'm surprised they're still doing that. Are these in gloves?
It's not that. Your mask is around your neck the whole time you're eating pretzels.
They're encouraging you to take your mask down.
I let in with the hot mask talk to set up the fact that you can't eat the pretzels with your mask on. So it's nothing but mask talk. Then they hand you a sack of stale pretzels. The flight, can I say this too? As much as I enjoy a snack, our flight was at 10:05?
Yeah, 10:10.
10:10. You can eat breakfast before 10, and you can eat lunch after you land at 11:32. You know what I mean? Like, you're literally on the plane for 56 minutes. Like, you probably don't need to eat. You don't need to eat during that period of time.
No, and if you're starving, four pretzels aren't going to save you. So the pretzels are a non-starter.
Also, it's a decent size. I haven't opened one in months, but it's a fairly hefty sack of sticks or pretzels or munchies or whatever it is. And then they give you water. So they give you the world's saltiest snack, and it's pretty abundant, and a water. And theoretically, you could sit there eating those pretzels and then taking a hit off the water and then eating the salty pretzel again. You could do that for more than half the flight. Like, you can just sit there and eat that stuff. And the whole deal is mask on, mask on, mask on, sir, mask on. And then here's some pretzels, mask off, times everyone in the plane. What is that? Have they thought it out? It doesn't make sense. How come nobody? They do a lot of other things in the name of safety. Like, we've canceled our drink menu. Like, there's no beverage card anymore for safety. Okay, but you could have your mask on and they could serve you a drink. The pretzel, mask off. What is it, Gina? You think? Got thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, I know we want less regulation and less of this security theater, but instead of working harder, not smarter, they'd be smarter just to say, if they're not canceling the service altogether, they'd say, we're approaching our 8-minute pretzel snacking period. So you have 8 minutes to enjoy your pretzels and then mask
pretzel
back on.
Derby.
Yeah,
pretzel
whatever.
Derby.
But just have someone sit there and be the mask police, which isn't working apparently, makes no sense. At least time it and then say, we're collecting these in 8 minutes. Please enjoy your pretzel sticks.
Was there any enforcement of masks? Did you hear any announcement or see a witness?
She was going up and down the aisle.
Yeah, no, I'm saying like it's more like, sir, you're not wearing. Not, I'm not talking about around the neck, like August. I mean, was anyone without mask and did they get talked to?
Everyone.
That will happen on
everybody who everyone had a mask. Otherwise, I don't think they're letting you on without a mask. Mm. Everyone had a mask, but the constant refrain is pull it up.
Right.
Pull it up. But
yeah, they would walk the aisles akin to like checking if your seat belts were on or if your bags are pushed under the chair. It was also check your mask.
Check your mask. But it's like saying, back when they used to go nuts about turning your phone off, but then going, you can do some texting, but then turn the phone back off again. Cool. Like it was mask on, mask on, mask, sir, mask up, mask up. Ironically, it wasn't even having your mask on. It was pull it up. Pull it up because people would pull it down. Right. They'd drink and then they'd leave it down. You know, so it's like pull it up, pull it up, pull it up. Here's a salty pack of empty calories that's going to force you to pull it down and keep it down for an extended period of time while you munch away on pretzels.
It doesn't make any sense. It's absolutely working harder, not smarter. I don't understand it. Because your last flight, your fantastic, luxurious first class experience.
First class spread, yeah.
Yeah, they even, you know, took precautions. I mean, quote unquote, they dialed it way back in the name of safety. So the fact that they even threw these pretzels at you makes no sense whatsoever on a less than an hour flight.
Well, they give you pretzels because they give you pretzels. So, you could say the pretzels were grandfathered in. But then we had a whole epidemic, with a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So now we have a deadly pandemic. So then they go, well, we still want people to fly, but it's during a deadly pandemic. What shall we do? Well, let's have them wear masks and let's really enforce that mask thing. Mm-hmm. But here's the question. Southwest as an entity, they're not stupid. They're there to make money, but they're not dumb. They're a shrewd business, and they grow by leaps and bounds every year. They're anything but dumb. And everything is so litigious these days that everything needs to be sort of vetted through the eyes of a personal injury attorney. You know, and they probably have floors of attorneys that work for Southwest. So the mask, then, if in fact it is, I don't want to say deadly, but let's just say flying without a mask is will spread the disease.
Increases your risk.
And creates a risk. If this is a very real thing, if flying without a mask is a very real thing and a dangerous thing, so that we must constantly impose this this never-ending broken record of pull the mask up, and then forget it's chips. Let's just say we gave out those mini toothpicks with the floss in them and said, all right, who wants to floss? Everyone's floss. Well, everyone would pull their mask down and floss, and then you'd go, well, that's an inherently bad idea. You've told everyone to keep their mask on, and you're giving them an excuse to pull it down now. Right. So what do they know? Do they know something we don't know?
What's especially weird about it is, like you said, they're not dumb. They're in the business to make money. They're doing something that's not like a revenue generator. Like, let's get people to order pretzel. Let's get people to order whatever. It's a loss. You know what I mean? That operates at a loss with pretzels and water or whatever they give out, drinks. Like, why not just, in the name of safety, why not just suspend that or just do water or whatever? You know what I mean? Like, it's weird that it would feels like it's getting them from both angles.
Yeah. If they said we're going to suspend our distribution of pretzels, they would break out in applause, by the way, on the plane. I mean, at least half the people just pass on the bad yep. pretzels because everyone wanted the honey roasted peanuts that they're famous for, and they've gotten rid of half the year. But so it doesn't make them any money. They're perfectly within their rights to pass on this to go yep. due to COVID. They've done everything else due to COVID. So everyone
would be outraged, like, no pretzels. What's the meaning of this?
Right. In order to consume a pack of these pretzels, you got to pull your mask down for a long period of time and you got to chomp away. I don't know what Fauci says about chomping, but you're chomping away on these pretzels. And in an area where there's, you know, if the plane formally held 110 people, there's 80 people on this plane. Like, it ain't 50%. It seemed to be full-ish. It reminded me of a Southwest flight that you would have taken a few years ago that you would have said, it's not quite full or it's almost full, but I got right. a little room. I got a space between me and my partner, whatever it is. It was one of those kind of Southwest flights, what it felt like. So what do they know about masks? Do they think masks work? Do they think masks are necessary? Is there some theater going on here? Have they never thought this one out? Are we the first humans? Am I the first human of all these flights sitting there watching everyone pull their mask down and start eating? I mean, the reason Mike was getting yelled at is because he'd pull his mask down, eat some jerky, and then just lean back and not pull it back up. You're causing people to do this times thousands of people a day right. on thousands of flights, yet the masks are essential. So do you know something about the masks?
My guess is that, like you alluded to with the floors of lawyers, which I'm sure they have, the lawyers have determined that Southwest cannot be liable. You know what I mean? Once the flight starts, you start the flight with the mask, you choose to eat or drink something, which is human nature. That's not something that can come back to bite Southwest in the ass. So go for it. That's my guess.
Then the next question is, how come tons of people aren't getting sick on Southwest flights because everyone's got their mask down eating pretzels? Wouldn't we catch on to this? Like, wouldn't the CDC go, these guys are in this confined area with no mask, or their mask is around their ankles?
The urgent priority to alert everyone. You know, if it was a huge risk, I'm imagining they'd probably put their foot down and be like, don't take the mask off ever on the flight or whatever. But they obviously haven't done that.
And just as an example that just popped into my head, which I would say is probably a one-up move, but something that I think you'll find interesting, where my dad's staying, you know, I can't see him personally. I can only see him when he goes to the doctor. And I went there the other day to drop something off for him. And I saw somebody outside, an older gentleman in a wheelchair smoking. And I was like, oh my God. And I went up to the front and I was like, oh, you're letting patients out. Like, can we arrange for my dad to come onto the porch and I can just sit with him out there? I won't go in. And like, I got really excited and he kind of was talking and the guy who runs the place, and I didn't understand his point. And so we kept going back and forth. And finally he goes, well, Gina, I mean, legally we can't stop people from smoking.
Oh,
and I go, hold on one hot second. So if my if I light a Marlboro and shove it in my dad's hand, then we can go outside.
So glad you said hand. So
you've got your mission.
I and it's funny because my dad has an axe to grind against smoking and smokers. So that would probably not work. But I said, wait, so the person who's healthy by all intents and purposes, when we're talking about COVID, who could use a little fresh air and some sunshine from his daughter, can't go outside. But the lonely old man with a cigarette, you can't stop him because you can't stop people from smoking.
Wow. I feel like we built an entire society around stopping people from smoking. I'm surprised.
Except if you hit a certain age, then it's completely flipped.
Well, all I can say is, once I sit on this Southwest flight and observe everyone getting these snacks that causes them to pull their mask down after being told to put it up 3,000 times, then when I leave my house and I walk on my horse trail and I think, shall I bring a mask? I then think, no. And it's based on the science, at least the science I've gathered, of these Southwest flights.
It was lovely. We went to Carpinteria and Santa Barbara just for the day over the weekend, just to get out of town. And it was cold and foggy and crisp and like pirate weather. And it was beautiful. Not a mask on the beach, because there was a beautiful offshore wind blowing. And why would you wear a mask on a beach?
I had on a separate but equal note, I saw at the end, I saw the last 30 seconds of a Trump rally. And I always like what songs they pick. As we know, it's always a little controversy. Some people like it. Some of the artists don't. I thought I was being gaslit at the end of a Trump rally. But I also thought of myself as a genius as well, because I was speaking only last week about the Vietnam War ending in 1974 and the village people being born in 1977 and how that they came from Billy Jack and the Vietnam War and the Nixon impeachment. They were born out of that because this country wanted to boogie and we didn't want to talk about being raped by the river. And it was the end of the Trump rally from last night. And here's the song he chose.
No.
Trump was beyond a parody. He's dancing.
Does he know this is where this was a dog whistle for the gay men to go have sex at the Y?
I don't know if he's gaslighting us. I don't know if it's just good energy and he doesn't care. I don't know if he.
Please do the sign. Please make the line.
Please. That's what I was saying.
M-A-G-A.
That's good.
M-A-G-A. You can put it on your phone. You can get your car keyed. So, Jesus.
Wow.
I thought to myself, is this really happening, or is the news just pumping right. this over the top of him playing, Merle Haggard song? And I'm like, nope. He's playing YMCA, and then I thought, I think I may be a genius, because I was tapping into this YMCA, yep. this village people weird thing going on. And then I'm like, what is he doing? Who's picking this out? You know, he's a micromanager. I don't think he just gives it to some intern to play whatever music you want. He's got to have the approval.
Yeah,
he's got to know this is the song we're going to play.
So Victor Wilson, the village people, has answered questions about allowing Trump to play his song at the end of rallies. And Victor says that YMCA is an everybody's anthem and go-to song for fun. As for the president's use, I have not granted permission for use at his rallies because permission is not required. If I were a Trump hater, maybe I'd sue him simply out of spite, but I'm not.
Is Victor Wilson the black lead singer?
He is black.
Victor, I'm not gay Wilson. that's what's on his driver's license. Yeah. He's like the black guy. He's like, I'm not gay.
Definitely
I'm not gay.
Right. He says, I'm not going to have my lawyers sue
Victor,
the president.
No homo Wilson?
That's the one, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But his only request is he should at least do the YMCA dance while he's at it.
Agreed. I thought.
Wow.
I was like looking at it going, that's not really the village people. Like somebody is grafting this over this image as a goof. And then I realized, oh, it is the village people. And then I started thinking, I was just fucking talking about this. And I mean, it's not one of those stories that's going to impress anybody, but it's weird. I was tapping into this village people's zeitgeisty thing, and Trump's playing the gay anthem at the, I guess he could play It's Raining Men.
Yeah.
He does play another song.
I'm not that impressed.
He plays Macho Man by the Village People.
Really?
Oh, yeah. My God. How could he not do in the Navy when he goes and visits the troops?
We're beyond parody at this point.
Did you get that off of Victor Nohomo Wilson's website?
Yeah. It's a credit now. Yeah, he plays Macho Man routinely as well as YMCA.
Wow.
Macho Man.
See if Victor's been like married 8 times and has 17 kids or something, because it'd be funny because he's the main guy from the band, but
wow.
I'm pretty sure he's Victor Strait. All right, Casper Van Diem is going to be on in a second, and I'll talk to him. First, I'll tell you about the Solo Stove. Wow. Getting ready for camping weather out there, and it's getting cooling off. Nothing better than starting a fire when it's when it's cooling off out there. Maybe you're at the beach or around the beach. It's just the smell. Oh, I miss those days with s'mores and an open fire. Let's get back to that. Solo Stove, fire pits and stoves engineered for adventure. Stainless steel construction designed to regulate airflow and burn more efficiently. Burns even better than Kimmel's trash can with that Emmy bit he had the other night.
That's great.
So little smoke, you'll wonder how there's so much fire. This thing, you know I love building. You know I love all things metal and all things fabrication. This thing is a serious piece of stainless steel. It is no joke. No campfire smell on clothes or hair. Nothing left but ultra-fine ash for easy cleanup. Portable, built to last, easy, lightweight, and just a few little bits, and you get that thing to start. It is an easy starter. Lifetime warranty for every purchase. It is Solo Stove, right, Dawson?
No one needs a reason to gather around the fire. Solo Stove just took away any reason not to, and now you can get $10 off when you use promo code Adam at checkout. Just go to solostove.com, and remember, you get $10 off when you use promo code Adam.
All right, so...
Adam, Victor Willis... From 78 to 82, he's married to Felicia Rashad, who played Claire Huxtable on The Cosby Show. And then in 2007...
Hold on. She, Felicia No Fruit Fly Rashad?
That's the one, yes.
Okay, yeah, I know her.
It's the same.
Same one.
And then he married a second time. His wife, Karen, is a lawyer and an entertainment exec.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
They've had to upgrade that suit a few times.
Yeah.
That definitely wouldn't fit into Adam's police uniform theory.
Somebody get the leather man out. We got to punch some more holes in this belt. Yeah, well, you know, entertainers, they put on weight. I found that if real cops are going to pack on the LBs, imagine how fat the fake cops get. You know, I mean, they're not really running down perps or anything. They're just putting on makeup and going out on stage. Yeah.
Yeah, living the good life.
His slender day. So he was the lead singer and the straight guy from the Village People. And Trump's pumping the Village doing YMCA.
Hey,
but not committing to the letters.
Oh, no. And there might be a tie-in here, though I doubt it. Have you guys seen all the... all the Twitter hullabaloo about Lady G.
Lady Gaga?
No.
Different lady.
Ms. Lindsey Graham. There's a lot of hullabaloo that Lindsey Graham is allegedly very intimately familiar with a lot of the gay escorts.
This is not a relatively new story. This is probably a month and a half, 2 months ago.
Like Lindsey Graham with the gay escorts?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And did you hear the ladybug thing, Brian?
No.
Who wants to never eat again if you're feeling like it's time to... Do you want to hear something gross?
Kind of. Finish my shake.
Let me finish my pretzels.
Well, the newest story going around is that the latest escort said that, I can confirm that I've been with him because I went into the bathroom and I came out and he was on all fours and he looked like maybe there was something... not clean there. And he asked, Lady G, have you showered? He's like, yeah. He's like, do you mind if I, take a second look? And he kind of, does a little wipe down and it's still there.
The credit card swipe.
And the guy allegedly said, what is, there's like something all over you. And he looked and said he had moles all over. But wait, it's how Lindsay, it's how Lady G allegedly answered and said, them's ain't my moles, them's just my ladybugs.
Wow. When did this story come out?
I just saw that one like 3 nights ago.
Wow. The Lady G thing has been around for a while.
Yeah.
Although, no, sorry, Gene. I don't mean, you might have to retract that.
Yeah.
I just texted his publicist. He is a confirmed bachelor and a Southern dandy.
Oh, so, I apologize.
Yeah.
He does have that dandy feel to him.
Yeah, and do you think?
I get a hop on Twitter twice a day. I didn't see it trending. Was it trending or anything?
Oh, yeah. Now this is hashtag.
Sorry, when the story broke, whatever it was, 2 months ago, it was pretty popular.
Huh. Yeah, this now it's hashtag ladybugs, hashtag Lady G.
I wonder if my Twitter doesn't say trending, it says popular or something.
Yeah,
on
you
it.
Can
click
move
the
trending
it.
Tab within, yeah. within the
Oh, I'm on popular, not trending.
Yeah.
Oh.
Adam, you know what mine does? It says for you. And they put out a bunch of topics and trending things that they think you'll be interested in. But if you do one extra click, you can go to the actual trending topic. You know what I mean?
Like I shall do that. My naivete is I never touch anything. It's just as it is. So I think it's what's trending, but it's not what's trending. A lot of discussion about red turn arrows and car rims. I should have been suspicious. Yeah, BBS is coming out with a new three-piece modular for the 935.
Everyone's talking about it.
Wow, it's sweeping the nation. This is bigger buzz than the Emmys.
Oh my God!
Yes,
and Gina, that ladybug story was satire in a Medium post.
Are you sure?
Oh. Yeah.
Because then it was a trending satire story. Yeah. I'm very
people,
I, that's
a lot of
so glad I said allegedly.
It. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he does or doesn't have moles on his taint.
That remains to be no.
Makes more sense. All right, we'll take a quick break. Casper Van Dien is on the blower, and we'll talk to him right after this.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Aurora, Illinois. A 19-year-old man was charged with causing $10,000 in damage to products after spraying them with Lysol while wearing a sign on his back that said, I have coronavirus! The man was at Walmart! Definitely not a Jew!
Casper Van Dien is on Zoom, coming to us from Florida, I guess?
Florida it is.
We'll talk about his movie in a second. I was looking down on his bio, and this is something all men wish they had on their bio. Got in many fights because he was often referred to as a Ken doll.
I saw that, too. It jumped out at me.
Wow. I did. I did get in some fights when I was growing up. And I went to an all guy. See, it's not fair because I grew up in Jersey. That's where it started. But then when I went down to Florida, I went to an all guy military school. And something you don't want to be called at an all-guy military school is a Ken doll.
Right. If it's co-ed, then you want to be the Ken doll because that makes you sort of the alpha doll.
It's not such a bad gig if you're with women. But being a Ken doll with all bunch of guys, I was on the USS Forrestal from my junior year into my senior year. And they give you one flight shirt for the month and a half that you're on there as a cadet. And I went and hit the head. And when I came back, you know, they put your last name in the front and they put a cool nickname in the back. And everybody's like Maverick and Iceman, of course, because it's back in the day, of, you know, one of the greatest movies ever. And then they put Ken doll on the back of mine. So for a month and a half with 1,700 men, I had to, you know, walk around with Ken doll on it. I really wanted to kill a lot of people.
You're like a boy named Sue. You had to get tough.
Yeah, yeah.
Was the nickname Ken doll because of your striking good looks or because
no, I have
of your
no
lack of genitals?
Yes, lack of genitals.
Okay.
The USS Forrestal was the ship McCain was on when the guided missile essentially fired off and hit his plane and caused the biggest fire in U.S. military history.
I wasn't on it then.
Do you guys know the story of the Forestall?
Yeah. From you.
It's a crazy story, but it's also kind of a funny McCain story. Not funny, ha-ha, but he was sitting in his Intruder, whatever he was in. He was in a jet that was going to be taken off. Somebody jumped into their jet. A missile fired from their jet and, like, hit his jet, and it caught on fire, and he had to, like, climb out of it. What people don't know about McCain is not only was he shot down over Vietnam, but he also had to ditch his plane during training in, like, Pensacola, and was on the Forestall, too. I mean, he was involved with, like, three major aircraft. He had to bail out of airplanes on ships. Trump says he owes us for those planes.
Yeah. I like guys that don't cause fires right. on their ships.
There's footage. Yeah. There's black and white footage of McCain sitting in his Intruder, whatever he was flying back, and sitting on the deck of the Forestall with that. I don't know. You tell us, Casper. What do you know about that story?
I know basically that I miss McCain. I miss having people like him in politics who would reach across the aisle and at least had some semblance of sanity. And in this insane world, I miss men like that and who really stood up for stuff and were, you know, I might not agree with everything political that he had to say and everything, but like I did, as far as his character goes, I thought he was just an amazing man. So
I agree. He was on a Sky Raider. He was getting ready to take off. Somebody's missile malfunctioned, hit his plane. Fire ensued. Then all the Jet A fuel started pouring down in the decks, and everything caught on fire, and all the bombs started going off because the bombs were in the fire. It actually ushered in a new era of fireproof bombs, meaning if your ship catches on fire and your ship is full of bombs, they won't blow up and sink your own ship. That was that story. But you can figure that one out, Mike. So there's actual surveillance footage from back in the day of that whole thing. They'd have a camera that would be out on the deck of the aircraft carrier because you need to know if there was a failure of the landing gear, like what the accident was, essentially. But it's crazy. What did your dad fly, Casper? He was a military, right?
You know, P-3s and E-9s, and he was basically, what he'd do is he was the flight instructor at Pensacola when I was born. I was born in Milton, Florida. And so my dad was the head flight instructor. And then he went over to Japan. He was in charge of handing the Navy base back to the Japanese in 1970, 71. But at the time, he was flying over to Da Nang in Vietnam and then taking the troops over for liberties into Hong Kong. And so he'd get over there and he got fired at while he was doing that. And actually, a guy that I went to military school with, one of the gunnies there said to me, he said, you know, I served under your dad. But he waited until after I graduated high school, military school. He waited to tell me until afterwards. I was at military school with him for 2 years, and he didn't tell me he'd served under my dad and told me how brave my dad was. And I talked to my dad about it. He goes, I think it was just the plane backfiring.
Well, let's talk about that, because I was actually talking to Dr. Drew about this earlier in the day, but it was something I was thinking about, your military school and background and your dad's background. It reminded me of this, which is I'm trying to figure out what's going on with us as a civilization right now. And I realize people always kind of talk about participation trophies, like this generation are now the generation of the participation trophy. It's coming home to roost. They're now 25 years old. But what I'm realizing is I don't have a problem with the participation trophy. You show up, you go to practice, you participate, you can get a trophy. That's fine. I realize a more insidious part of what I feel like I'm experiencing from a lot of young people is not knowing how to lose.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is not what we did. You know, it's kind of interesting. We keep making these kids feel like winners. We didn't really teach kids to be a winner. When my son ran long distance track and he came in eighth place, he knew he didn't win, but because he went out for the medal ceremony, he didn't feel like a loser. He felt like something in between. And what we're talking about is not making everyone feel like a winner. It's not preparing them to lose, like having the slaughter rule and baseball and stuff like that. Do you guys think there's something going on? Losing was a major part of my life. All I did was lose my entire childhood. Yes.
And on top of that, you know, we played a lot of youth sports, you know, you more longer than I did, but like, I can speak for myself, and I assume maybe that something is similar or the same for you. I remember the losses, the painful losses. They stick with me to this day from when I was like 12, 13 years old. Like the wins, you know, great, you won. But like, I, you know, whether or not I learned a lot from those losses, maybe, you know, hardened my character or whatever. But you remember the losses. The losses stick with you. The wins are kind of fleeting.
And you can't
both. I mean, you can also get a little bit of encouragement by actually losing, because you can go, okay, good game, you got me this time, I'm going to be motivated to be even better next time. I saw what you did, and I'm going to step it up a little bit.
Yeah, all right.
You can have that effect too.
And I do realize what we're mislabeling it, which is, it's not that every kid feels like a winner, because in my kids' track meet, one kid came in first place and he stood on top of the podium. It's that my son didn't feel like a loser. I'm going to make sure he feels like a loser when I get home today. But losing,
report card.
Losing is a super important part of life. It's a really important part of life. And I think we're experiencing a lot of people in our society now who have no relationship with losing, which is sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But if you lose, you're not allowed to just go out and light things on fire. You lose until you win again. Max Pata, where is that Forrestal thing? It's got to be,
he's got it.
There's an 18-minute documentary about it produced by the Navy.
Yeah, it's why they made a lot of changes. But at some point, McCain literally pops the cockpit of his aircraft, climbs out of it, and jumps out of this thing. Was McCain's plane was hit by a rocket? Or a plane near a rocket fired while the thing was on the ground. Anyway, evidently they rebuilt it by the time Kendall came over there.
The rocket hit the plane next to McCain's, killing the pilot and igniting the jet fuel.
Right. So it hits the plane next to him, ignites the pilot and the jet fuel. He's got no ladder. That's a 6-7 foot drop. Like, he has to just climb out onto the nose of the plane and jump. Wow. Everything's flames everywhere. And so
there's fireballs like flying through the air
because the ammunition is going off. Right. But but it didn't sink, and they rebuilt
it. I was
thing.
On it. I think it's been put to bed now, but I don't know where or what happened to the USS Forrestal, but I was in there out of Jacksonville going into my senior year. They put us on. It's one of the things they do with cadets when you go to an elite military school. Well, you know, they just give you opportunities where you can go and do these things.
Was the plan for you then was obviously a military plan, not the Kendall plan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Kendall thing, I had to retire, I think, because I'm just too old now. I'll be 52 this year. So I think once you hit a certain age, you're no longer a Kendall.
How did we get into the acting then from the military, with the military in your background?
He caught a glimpse of himself in the mirror.
Working too hard.
I didn't want to be a Ken doll when I was growing up. I wanted to be the G.I. Joe. So I really wanted that. That's what I wanted, you know, and especially when you go to an all-guy military school, then you're getting in fights and it's just not pretty. But I loved it. I loved all that. I still love being called Ken doll. That was still kind of fun that I got that. It's a great, great story to tell on your show. The whole plan was, my family was into Broadway and education, the teachers and music and theater. They're making me get cultured. And I go kicking and screaming to the theater when I grew up in New Jersey, going to New York to see Broadway. I go kicking and screaming, come back singing and dancing. So it's their fault. I blame them.
Well, mom and dad. But so, all right, I want to try to break down your game film for a second, because your mom is this cultured side of the family, your dad's military side, but you end up in a military school. Now, I'm surprised your mom signed off on that, or did she get a vote?
My mom was like, please don't go. My dad was like, I'm proud of you. I think they were both proud of me. I was definitely a mama's boy. But, you know, I really thought I was going to go in the military. So many men in my family served. And it's one of my greatest regrets in my life, if we have regrets, is that I didn't serve. I think that it builds a lot of character for people. And just having the opportunity I had was I fully enjoyed it. But I also really appreciate the men and women who do serve. You know, I feel an obligation to try to portray those roles that I get in that to the best of my ability, to be as authentic as I can. And, you know, that's what I studied growing up. I studied military. I studied the films because I just loved them. I would watch the films, and that's what we watched when we were in military school. I read the books on it. I was reading all those. I read Starship Troopers before I you know, was in it. I read it when I was a kid. You know, it's just something we do.
How did you then get to military school? I mean, why military school in my world is for kids that are problem kids, like they're acting out, they're having discipline problems. In your world, maybe it's something different because your dad was in the military.
I wanted to go. I wanted to do. I thought it was my duty and my service. I was so proud. My dad's my idol. My dad's an amazing man. I mean, he served 20 years in the service, then he taught it for 12 years. And my grandfather's Marine Corps, World War I. One of the few survivors of his battalion. And then, you know, my other grandfather was a medical corpsman in the Navy, my mom's dad. And so everybody in my family was military. And I thought that's really where I wanted to go. And then I just thought I'd give the acting thing a shot 32, 33 years ago. And that's all I've been doing ever since.
Well, were you discovered? I mean, obviously, so, you know, if you grow up like, I don't know, Jimmy Kimmel, you know, you go out and you do comedy or whatever, you develop that, but you're not at a ice cream shop and someone taps on your shoulder and goes, hey, kid, you know, you got it.
Well, one of the photographers saw Jimmy with his shirt off when he was young right. And said, I have to shoot you. I have
on the fast track.
Yeah,
that's right. So obviously there's a difference with you because there's an aesthetic feature that young Kimmel didn't possess back then. So did somebody sort of discover you, or how did that work?
I think they just discovered my jaw, and they realized that the rest of me comes with it. But for a long time, I think people just wanted to cast just the jaw. And they thought that actually the jaw was a better actor than the rest of me. So, you know, that's just, you know, came with, you know, I get to tag along with that.
Well, we'll talk about the new movie in just one second. First, let me take care of a little business and helpful business and BetterHelp. Online licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, anxiety, relationships, sleep, anger, self-esteem, and more. These days, boy, never been a better time to get a little help for the old bean up there because of all that's going on. Connect with your counselor in a safe, private online environment. Anything shared is confidential. Simply fill out a questionnaire and they want to assess your needs. Get matched in under 48 hours. Easy to schedule secure video or phone session, plus exchange unlimited messages. If for any reason you're unhappy with your counselor, request a new one anytime, no charge whatsoever. Over 1 million people using BetterHelp. In fact, they're so busy these days, I'm not surprised that they're actually doing a lot of recruiting and hiring additional counselors in all 50 states. It's BetterHelp, right, Dawson?
BetterHelp is a truly affordable option, and our listeners get 10% off your first month with the discount code Corolla. So why not get started today? Go to BetterHelp.com/Corolla. That's BetterHelp.com/CAROLLA. Talk to a therapist online and get help.
So, Casper, the new movie, The Second, it's available now on digital and on demand, also stars Ryan Phillippe. Am I saying Phillippe, Ryan? Yeah, that's how he
Phillippe?
Says it.
Phillippe?
Phillippe? Phillippe. Oh, yeah. Phillippe. I see him over at Kimmel's parties. I should get that, get that right. Action movie. Got kind of a, I don't know, little White House Down in it. Or is it White House Down? I'm trying to think of
it. I feel like a little throwback to 80s, 90s real action. You know, the director, Ryan Skiba, he when he called me up for it, he goes, I got this perfect role for you. You're going to. It's perfect. It's you. And then I read it and I was like, I'm playing this guy with, he's kind of heartless. And so I had to think about what he thinks of me. and maybe take a look at myself again afterwards. But I really liked what he wanted to do, and he had like 15 days to shoot this whole movie. We had like a little tiny budget, but we went for it. Ryan's pretty physical. I'm pretty physical. I've been doing this a long time. And a lot of the guys, the stunt team was amazing. And the thing is, we don't have what like Tom Cruise has or Keanu Reeves. We don't have all the time and everything. So it's got to be what we've already been doing for our careers, training and fighting, all that. And then what the stunt guys can bring together. And these guys were really young and hungry, and that just made it more infectious. And so I had a lot of fun shooting the stunts and the fight scenes.
Brian,
it's funny because 15 days doesn't sound like very much time, but there were maybe, I watched the movie, there were maybe 6 locations in the whole movie. I mean, you know, Die Hard has become a genre unto itself, right? Under Siege, Die Hard on a boat, Speed, yeah. Die Hard on a bus. This is kind of Die Hard in a school. And
Die Hard at the dorm.
In a dorm, yeah, kind of.
Die Hard. Yeah, no, yeah, but I play the Hans Gruber.
That's right.
So
you're not a nice guy.
You know, I was surprised that he said that I was perfect for that. I didn't get that. I was like,
well, as long as you're a nice guy in real life, you'll be fine. Otherwise, you're going to end up like Ellen, which I think will play her.
Well, we have that
at some point.
She was so nice when I was on her show. So nice.
He's on Ellen tomorrow.
No, I was on her years ago. I haven't been on it for years, but she was the nicest. Couldn't be. She was so genuine when I was on. So I have no idea. I hear all these things.
That's just because you two have the same hair. I didn't have the same experience with her.
Oh, you didn't?
No. I had found. I here's what I study, and I always kind of study it. Or maybe you guys tell me. I kind of judge a lot of adult males by the relationship they have with their adult kids. So when I find out, I don't know, it's like, I think it was like Ted Williams had not talked to his adult kids in 30 years or something. I believe it was Ted Williams for some reason. But you know the adults that have adult age sons and they don't have a relationship with them or they don't talk? And once in a while, there's extenuating circumstances, like, oh, the kid's schizophrenic, he won't take his meds, we can't get him to take his meds, or something like that. But by and large, it usually means that person is not great. And when I judge people and when I go to their work, I look at how the underlings, how their employees treat them, or how scared the employees are, or how they act. I don't want to study the queen bee. I want to study the worker bees and see how the worker bees are around them, you know. And I got a whiff of fear when I got to the Ellen set. Now, if you go to the Letterman set, you get fear meets confusion. Like, I don't think Dave's going to like it if you blah, blah, blah. So don't do it, you know. But then when you go do Kimmel or Leno, you don't get that at all.
Yeah, see, that was awesome.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I did her show a long time ago, so I wasn't aware of everything that was going on. I was just promoting probably Starship Troopers or something like that. I had no idea what I was promoting, but she was very sweet to me then, and everybody on there was so sweet. But you know, I didn't get to see everything, and I was being rushed in and out by publicists and stuff like that, so I didn't get a time to sit back and actually enjoy the experience as much as I do now when I get to be on these things, because now I'm not as overwhelmed with it as I was when I first started.
Yeah, so, does it all feel sort of like I led that life for a while too? You get ushered from one place to the next place and just sort of pushed and sit down and get up and go somewhere else, and it all becomes a dream at some point.
Yeah, and then you don't become as observant as like what you're talking about. About is I'm a people watcher. We're actors, we're entertainers, we're on this, we're doing this. So observing people is fascinating. To see how they act and react is always, it gives you, you know, it gives me so much satisfaction and joy to see it, even if it's horrible, and especially sometimes if it's horrible, but it gives me something that I can, you know, then go, oh my God, that would be so interesting to play or perceive or do, or why would they even do that? Or, you know, but now in this stage of my career where I play like the racist father on All American, like coming into that, I'm the bad guy or whatever. It's easier to come in and just sit back and watch and enjoy and see everybody.
Sorry, go ahead. Is there Gina Ball.
I mean, I was playing the racist father on All American one day. I was going to do this, and I had to be, you know, I had to be impolite to one of the young black men in there and call him a boy. And he goes, call me a boy one more time. And I had to do it again. And I'm drunk and doing all this. And I was on my way to work, and my daughter, Grace Van Dien, who's working all the time now, and she's 20, 23, going to be 24 next month. She's amazing. She calls me up. She goes, what are you doing, Dad? I'm like, on my way to be the drunk, racist, horrible dad. And she goes, that's okay, Dad, because you're a really good dad. And so I went in there, and I was the worst man I'd ever been. That's because she said that. I felt so good that I could be that bad. And they were telling my wife, they go, how does he get to be so drunk and mean? So, and she's like, he just done it today.
Ted Williams' daughter would have never said that.
That's right.
But did Ted Williams have a son that he didn't speak to for like 30 years, Max Pat? I don't want to frag Ted if it wasn't, in fact, him. Yes, Gina.
Yeah, so I saw the movie too. Congratulations. And so many fight scenes, like amazing. I don't know how that goes down in 2 weeks. I'll never understand. And it's incredible. And I'm wondering about the younger actors on there. You had a wonderful young woman and young man, and they started, you know, you had to, I imagine, have a stunt coordinator, I would imagine, teach them quickly, unless they come from that background. What was it like working with them, and were you able to sort of take them under your wing in all facets of the production?
So Ryan worked mostly with them. I had some experiences with them. The young girl had also done a lot of stunts and stunt training, and this was really her first big role. So she was actually, you know, one of my stunt buddies that I've known for a long time, was actually really good friends with my wife.
Oh, right on.
He was one of her students, and so she had done swords and stuff like that. And Ryan got to work with these kids, but the stunt coordinator's name was Ryan as well. And then another Ryan was my stunt double. So there were like three Ryans, too many Ryans on this one. But I had 9 days that I went into the dojo and trained with them before the film started, which is rare in nowadays in filmmaking, you know. And so we were able to do that for 9 nights beforehand. I think they did it longer than that, but I was offered 9 nights at the dojo. So for like 3-4 hours, I went for 9 nights before we started. And then while we were on set, we'd rehearse in between takes and everything like that. So they kept going over all this so that we'd, you know, because it's a dance. It's a repetition.
Exactly.
Be careful, because you can get hurt. Yeah. And you know, I'll be honest. I went home and I iced. I had cuts and bruises. And I got, you know, you get hurt. You go over, you do the falls, you get flipped, you land on the concrete, because it's just, but you do the falls proper, because I've been training and doing it this way. And we rehearsed it. I wouldn't have been able to be so good if we didn't rehearse it. It would have been really hard.
Ted Williams' son. Sorry, after the divorce, never saw that. I don't know. You took his name off there and stuff, Max.
Oh, well, I'm reading. But then eventually they were good. And his son, John, actually did a lot of business for Ted.
How long were they estranged for, maybe? I just remember when he died, there was some story that they were estranged.
The story is that his half-sister and his son had a feud over what to do with the remains.
Oh, there was a remains thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Him and Casey Kasem.
That's right.
Yeah. I think me and my sister might have an argument over my dad's remains. Like, you take it. No, I don't want
it's hot potato.
I was just going to say, it's a little game of hot potato.
Casper mentioned about the movie, and it was one, it was on the tip of my tongue just then when you said it was a throwback movie. I mean, it's a throwback to those 80s and 90s action movies where you're like, wait, why did that happen? Who cares? We're on the next scene. I'm wondering, Casper, maybe it came up and maybe it didn't, but why did your character shoot someone in broad daylight, out in the, like, exposed to the world, but then later bludgeon someone to death in the basement when a bullet would have been far more efficient?
Yeah, I think he pissed me off.
That's fair.
The money. I think that's what it was. I just think it was just, and I had to justify the cane.
The cane.
They gave me that
play.
Cane, and I was like, what am I gonna do with this cane? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, you have me with a cane, yet I don't use it. Why don't I use it in one of the fights? Or why don't I use it? So I used it to bludgeon, you know. So at one point, and I actually broke the cane, unfortunately, because they had me, no, hit it harder, hit the cement harder. So I actually hit it really hard and it broke. And I was like, nice. That was great. So
the cane became its own character at that point.
Well, it was a cool outfit. I really dug what Driver wore. It was a lot of fun to play that.
Yeah. The movies. You
know, it was just all practical. It wasn't, we didn't do the visual effects and special effects that they do in a lot of the movies now, fights. Which was fun to do.
The movie's called The Seconds, available now on digital and on demand. And Casper's all over it and doing most of his own stunts. So enjoy. If you want a throwback action 80s, 90s film, go enjoy The Second. Casper Van Dien, thank you so much for joining us here today. We'll bring you back. We'll see you in about a year, as we always do. Stay safe, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Casper. All right. Before we go into news, let me hit JB Weld here. DIY projects to get through. Want to save money and avoid paying the repairman. Big or small repairs, home or garage, ordinary household glue. Well, it's just ordinary. You need stronger. You need better. You need JB Weld. We're proud to have JB Weld as a sponsor. They're great. I know the owner. Hung out with that guy at the SEMA convention for a while in their booth. Pros and DIYers have trusted JB Weld for over 50 years, proudly made in the USA. You keep JB Weld in your toolbox or your kitchen drawer. It's good for metal, wood, plastic, and more. You don't glue it. You JB Weld it. It's available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. It is JB Weld. All right, let's take ourselves a quick break. We'll come back and do the news right after this.